For October the 16th, 2020, we talk about Star Wars Squadrons, Phasmophobia, and we ask you which game characters should get dating shows. Welcome to Level 346. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Jala Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Apologies for the impromptu week off last week. The short version of the story is technical problems. My computer wouldn't turn on.
Yeah, it was more than a little harrowing.
It took several hours to get it back up and going. I felt terrible because I kept everybody else who was going to be on that night waiting for a half hour as I was panicking.
We were just
trying to get things back on.
Cole, we were just chilling and talking about like how much work you do for the podcast and how and then also talking about your kitties and then just catching up because I fell into a vortex for 5 million years. So yeah, it's fine.
It's been a while since you've been on.
Yes.
Yeah. So hopefully that'll be the last week off. This is just a couple of weeks in advance. We're not going to be recording on election night.
Cool.
I'm not gonna, like, we recorded on an election night last time. And you know, I try not to be too superstitious of a man, but yeah, so that, like, week there will
I feel like we need a drinking game for election night.
Like, I mean,
for example, every time it's election night, you drink.
Here's this bottle. By the end of this, it will be empty.
Yeah, it will be empty or have somehow fashioned itself into a Molotov cocktail. Considering it's 2020.
Yeah.
So that's that's just a little programming note. Another programming note here is we have launched the new show on the network, Orb. Gary and I's Orb, doing the Venture Brothers podcast.
Ooh.
So that is available on earlier release now, and it's going to be available for public consumption week by week, episode by episode recap of that very good show. You can find that by going either to our Patreon or going to orb.show is the URL for that.
Yay. Oh, I've got one from Dennis. I need to shoot up at the start of the episode because he bowed out so that I could be here today. So by the time this episode goes up, late pledges for Deck of Wonders will be open. So definitely check that out.
Yeah, if you missed out on it, now you can get it. I think that's what late pledges means.
Yes.
And I'm sure you can find that information Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words. Jala, it's been the long since you've been here. What you been up to? How are you doing?
Oh boy. Well, okay. My dad was in the hospital for a week, like after the last time I was on or during, I don't remember. It's been some time. He was in the hospital for a week. He has been recovering since. He is now, but he's at home, and you know, like, we take it day by day. So okay. Other than that, I've been doing a bunch of dancey stuff, and I'm actually prepping to record a new choreography that the first minute of it was made by one of my instructors, and then I had it from, like, one of the classes that I took, and then I expanded on it and finished out the rest of the song. So the rest of it is Jala choreography. And I'm right now, like, I just finished working on designing that, and I will be recording that it'll still be a few weeks, just because I need some time to rehearse it and schedule time, like book the studio to do it and all of that. But you can follow all of my Dancy Dancy adventures if you like things like pole, floor flow. I actually also started doing twerk and belly dance. All of that stuff is on my Instagram account, not my Jolichon account. I have a new one that is request to see it because I don't want weird, creepy people messaging me dick pics.
Yeah.
So the link to that is pinned on my Twitter account. The only reason why I say that is because the name is in Japanese, so it's probably easier if you just pull it up from that. So twitter.com/Jolichon, and then it is the top post that is pinned, has a link to the Instagram. Also, I got Dave to take deep stretching, which is splits and back bends, and also twerk. I got him to take twerk with me, and he's mm-hmm. also eventually going to be doing pole with me too whenever COVID allows him to move here. So that's pretty badass. And so he started doing invert training and stuff like that. And I was so mad because I was telling him, Dave, it's so hard for me to invert. And then he's like, I'm going to try. And then like right after this, I'm like, I'm so terrible at this pole dancing thing. And then he sends me like 5 videos of him inverting. Here, look at me do the thing. And so I was just like, point your toes, you asshole. Because
Is that holding yourself upside down on the pole?
Yes. Okay. I've since then easily figured out how to do it. It was mostly just a matter of figuring out the muscle activations for it and practicing the movements. I figured it out. But anyway, like when I was sobbing my eyes out, like, oh, I suck at pole dancing. Then, he was just like, here, look at me do the thing. Because men have more starting upper body strength. I'm like, fuck you and you're doing the thing. Point your toes. So anyway, cool. Today I voted. So 2.5 hours later, I got out of the line, but I did my duty. So good job. Please go vote.
Please.
Let's see what else. I'm going to a Halloween pole choreography class as Grumpy Bear.
From the Care Bears?
Yes, from the Care Bears. I'm going to be Grumpy Bear.
Okay.
And I shared an image of that on my Dancy Dance profile, but I also put it on my Twitter. I will pull it up and drop a link for you guys, too, so you can see my Care Bear version of self. I even have, like, a mask, a Care Bear mask, so it's pretty baller.
Nice.
So, and then one more Dancy thing. Two of my dance friends, Ariel and Kim from Dauntless Dance, are performing in a multi-day Halloween dance show on Twitch. Details are also dropped on my Twitter, so you can pull that up there. Links and all of that wonderful fun stuff. So that is all the stuff I've got over on my end, which is, just a few things.
But oh, it's been a while.
It has been a minute since. My dad painted the dog.
I saw that. Yeah,
that sure was a thing.
It is amazing.
So my dad, never give my dad any kind of marker or hair dye and let him get bored, because he just like it, don't give him a white dog ever in life. So in the Slack, I have dropped photos of poor Poo and also like photos of my Grumpy Bear outfit, which all of that is on Twitter. Well, my dad also once upon a time, like in 2005, did this to my sister's dog, put eyebrows on her, and I didn't even know that was something that could be like, but I didn't even know. Okay, in 2005 everybody had flip phones. My dad, I was at work, and my dad suddenly sends me a text message. My phone buzzes, and I look at it, and it's this photo of my sister's white dog with eyebrows. And I didn't even know that my dad knew how to take pictures, let alone send text messages, let alone...
If it's important, you figure out how.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, like, I died laughing, showed everybody, because my sister worked with me at the time at the same place, and everybody knew her. So I was dying laughing, showed everybody, lost my mind for a little bit, went back to work, and then... A little while later, like an hour later, I get another picture where he's made tiger stripes on her with a Sharpie, because my dad got bored. He had a white dog and a Sharpie. I mean,
he just treated that dog like it was a cast and it was the last day of summer camp.
Yes. So my dad does this apparently as a hobby.
Right.
So, yeah, one of my friends is like, now I know where your creative side comes from. I'm like, yeah, I guess so. It just kind of ran rampant with my dad.
is Pooh still pink?
Pooh is not pink anymore. She's lightly pink, but she got a bath, and so she still has pink residue in her hair, mostly in her little beard, because she's like a poodle schnauzer mix. That is part of why she's called Pooh Bear. But anyway, so she's only slightly pink now, but yeah, she originally had like a bright red stripe down her back because my dad thought that was cool. I don't know. Reverse functor. Yeah. I don't know.
it is very cute.
It is very cute. Yeah. Poor suffering Pooh. Anyway, tell me about everybody else's life. How is everybody else doing?
David, you've been doing some travel, and how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. Went back to visit family in the wonderful world of Mansfield.
Right.
So I don't know. Was pretty chill overall. Was good opportunity to get outside the city. I'm still found myself a little creeped out by how quiet and dark it gets.
Yep. It's great.
Oh yeah, stars exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and your parents, I mean, not to ruin their OPSEC, they still live like kind of out there.
Right. Yeah.
Is it the same place?
Exactly.
Okay.
So that was kind of interesting. It's also weird, like, stepping off the plane in Columbus and, like realizing, oh, this is a city that does sleep.
Yeah. I am at the airport, but I do not know how I'm going to get away from the airport.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Kind of cool. My parents, have gotten kayaks. And apparently Clear Fork put in some like kayak launches. So it's really easy to, they're basically slides with like handles on the side, but you just put the kayak on them, get in and like just kind of yank yourself down the slide. So it's super easy to, I don't know what you do. You launch a kayak?
You yeet the kayak.
You yeet the kayak into the reservoir.
Yeah.
I imagine it's probably pretty hard in a body of water like Clear Fork Reservoir to get kind of out in the middle, maybe. Like maybe it's a way to get further out so you don't have to paddle out to get on open water, maybe.
Yeah. So long story short, we did some kayaking, so that's kind of cool. Saw a lot of kingfishers and herons and snake birds.
God, I love that place.
Yeah.
This was probably a few weeks ago. It's gorgeous now. I just drove by there a little bit ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really great. I don't know. This is like, I feel like a super old person thing to say, but I really appreciate like the plants outdoors and greenness a lot more.
Yeah, no, dude, high five, buddy. I'm not gonna laugh at that. That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah,
I'll chuckle at it because like the subtext is like the older you get, the more you don't like people and you just want to be away from them.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. I mean, if it's like they say, if you don't hate people, it means you don't need low enough of them. other than that, been doing some really cool martial arts seminars. I think I mentioned it some Thai weapon art. Learned actually some reverse grip sword techniques, so now a Zatoichi is me.
Wait, what does that mean? What does reverse grip mean?
So basically, think of like the slasher like knife grip in every movie, you know coming out of the bottom of your fist. Basically the sword with the blade coming out of the bottom.
Is it like the equivalent of holding a gun sideways when you
it's the Ahsoka Tano of lightsabers, you know?
I don't know what that means, but cool.
Someone will get that reference.
I can intuit it, yes.
But yes, no, it's just been a lot of fun running around doing irresponsible things with weapons.
Nice. as God intended.
Yeah. Nothing is more American.
I would argue nothing is more human. Nice. Well, there's plenty of laughter is more human. Laughter is more human than that, but weapons are close. Ben, how about you?
I have not been doing anything with weapons or I don't know, dog painting. I've had a tame couple of weeks. I've just been doing video games, so I'll have a lot to say in the next section, I think.
Oh my god, actually video games for this show about video games. That's revolutionary.
Yeah. Be good I do a change of pace, yeah.
Nice. And I don't have too much of anything. I mostly just cats. People who follow on the social media will know that Dottie is growing like a weed. Dottie is the new kitten that I got. She has entered the phase where the sharp parts are becoming more of an issue. Yep. The teeth and the claws and stuff like that. So my hands are kind of hamburger meat right now, trying to break her of those habits. No, there's just that. I could talk about all of the drywall patches I've been doing as I've been moving some stuff around.
Is this been because of Dottie? Is Dottie like attacking the drywall?
No, they're unrelated. That'd be weird.
Dude, we were straight fawning over the cat pictures that you posted last week when we were in Discord. Like the one of Greta, like those are straight up like Disney eyes that she's giving the camera.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Greta's eyes are astounding. And if Dottie's eyes end up anything like her mom's, they're going to be really good too.
Has Greta decided is she becoming more and more threatened as Dottie gets bigger?
No. Greta, my older cat, she decided she's just unfailingly patient with Dottie. Doesn't really seem to mind anything. If she gets bothered, she just relocates, or she will pin the kitten down and groom her, and then that causes Dottie to go and relocate. So there's not really been any conflict, which is nice. You know, that's not always a given, but I think that just they're both temperamentally kind of a match, at least for right now.
That works.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it is nice. It is nice having animals. Animals are good, even if you don't paint them. But I want to talk about video games. So why don't we do that?
Okay. I guess.
I think we can do it's been a while. We can have a pre-roll like this if we want to. It's fine. No, but I think we've got the regular kind of show, long preamble aside. We're going to do the grind. We're going to do the multiplayer, maybe do a little bit of an emboss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, I will throw it to you, as is customary.
All right. So I've only been playing a couple of things because, as previously mentioned, there's been, you know, family stuff and whatnot. Yeah. So first thing that I've been doing is I finished the Sniper Elite 4 DLC, as I promised the last time I was on. So Dave and I co-opted through all of the rest of that as well. In the DLC, you get new unlockable weapons and new characters to play in co-op. For most of the game, there aren't any weapons that really outshine your starter kit, but Dave found a rifle that he liked better, and I found a semi-auto silenced pistol that I liked better than, you know, like the default equipment. But for really, for most of the game, we were just rolling with the defaults. And I'm sure there's probably somebody who's like a sniper elite, you know, super, super person, you know, who's just like,
sniper elite elite?
Yeah, sniper elite elite, who's just like, no, why would you ever do that? This is so much better, but oh well. That's how we played. And obviously from like the time that I talked about it last, if you missed it, I tend to basically do sneaky sneak until I decide that I don't want to sneaky sneak anymore. And then I stop being a sniper and then I just become Rambo and I jump in and cause a distraction. And Dave is holed up somewhere. Once he gets into position, he snipes people while I blow shit up. I blow everything up. I blow up every single large object I can find that can be blown up. I throw grenades at people. Like, I'm just exploding everything. I do not act like a sniper whatsoever. And then I will switch back to sniper mode, you know, for the next section for a little bit until such a time that I feel impatient with the large amount of guys. Because it's in this...
It's sort of like the Roadhouse thing, you know, be sneaky until it's time not to be sneaky.
Pretty much, because the thing is that in the DLC, what I noticed is that there's like, it seems like just tons and tons of guys. I can only imagine how terrible this would be to try to do solo. Because boy, like there were just like there would be areas where there's not that many people, but then there's just like high concentrations in certain areas, and I just don't want to sit there and snipe every last single one of them, you know, for 5 hours. I mean, like that's tedious. That's not fun. So, you know, in order to draw them all out so that they can be shot by somebody, I cause a ruckus, and that's what I do. So in the DLC, you get 4 additional levels. There's a Kill Hitler level, and then there's a 3-part mission. Target Führer was somewhat disappointing because we rolled up into the fortress, okay? We took all of our time picking off all the guys on the way there. Okay, cool. We get into the fortress, and as soon as we get into the fortress, there's Hitler chilling out in the open, and just as soon as we walk in. And so I aimed at him, and I'm like, Dave, this can't. Dave's like, is this even body real? Double. Like, why is it? And I'm like, oh hell no! I'm a snipe his ass. So I did. I shot him in the head from far, far away. Just as soon as we walked in, and then that was it. Like that was he. It was him. It wasn't a body double. It was literally him. And we shot him. And then we were trying to figure out where the exit point was. And this would have been great if it was back where we came in, but for some reason, AKA they wanted to make you go through the level. The exit point was like in the middle of all the guys. So we had to go back into the fortress and spend the rest of our time on that level, just trying to pick off all the people who were pissed off because we already took care of Hitler. So that wasn't very good. that was not a very good rendition of this. The Sniper Elite 3 version of the Target Führer mission, because this is like a legacy thing. I think it happens in all of them, or at least it has in the last two. In the DLC, there's this extra mission. The rendition that was in Sniper Elite 3 was a lot better than this version. But anyway, so that was not my favorite DLC. The other one is a 3-part called Deathstorm. And this one was actually pretty funny. I had already mentioned that the levels kind of felt long or kind of concentrated with guys. So some of this stuff took a while, even with my play style, to get through. But there was this one point where, because each one of the levels has different objectives, and there was one point where Dave and I were supposed to knock out one of the German scientists and then hide them in a hay bale. And in the middle of trying to say, oh, I'm over by the hay bale, you know, because here's Dave wandering around with this guy we just knocked out. But like he misspoke and he said, Hail Bay, and he kept on calling it a Hail Bay, Hail Bay. And so, like, I was thinking H-A-L-E-B-A-E. And I was like, is it? And so, like, that ended, yeah, that ended up becoming like my new nickname, the Hail Bay, because, you know, like, I'm super strong and I'm Bay. So Jala is Bay. So Hail Bay. So, so that was a thing that occurred. Because he just kept on, and at first I thought he did it on purpose, but then he kept doing it, and I'm okay. Like, I don't even think he really, and when I finally told him, he just lost it, because he didn't even know he was
didn't realize he was saying
it. No, yeah. No. So, but anyway, in that same one where we were searching for the scientists, there was another person we were supposed to find that we were supposed to rescue, and unfortunately, in that instance, it was inside of a really packed city, and it took about 20 minutes in this one section going through every last house, combing around, trying to figure out where this person was at. And it was really a pace killer. And some of the maps had areas that looked less polished than the main game, with kind of flickering textures and that kind of thing. But the good news, though, is that every single one of those maps had... as I mentioned, different objectives, but also the terrain was different in each one, and different types of challenges where, like, extra troops would be summoned in, or there would be, you know, extra tanks and stuff rolling around or something, you know, patrolling that you had to deal with and come to grips with. So it was really fun. There were lots of thought out aspects to it, even if it wasn't quite as polished as the main campaign. Also, all of the maps had a lot of long range shots available, as well as the terrain that allowed for sneaking up on enemies for melee kills. Mm-hmm. So also there were a wide variety of types of units and also vehicles. So, you know, they gave you a nice spread of what the game has to offer, both tactically and, well, tactically play wise, and just, like, you know, in what you had to fight, what you had to come up against. Yeah. So, anyway, if I didn't hop out of hiding and blow shit up as often as I do, this, each one of these maps probably would have taken 3 hours or something, because there were so many people. To sit there and be sneaky about it would take too much time. There were just so many people. And, like, granted, you don't have to kill everybody on the map, but guys, I can't leave any one of them alive.
Mm-hmm. No, no.
Every one of them and every vehicle has to be destroyed.
You have to send a message.
Everything has to go. So
I like the Rando Rambo approach.
I'm the Hail Bay. That's what I do. Who needs a Hail Mary when you've got a Hail Bay?
Oh, shit.
Anyway. So anyway, you can catch the DLC on sale, and that is the way that I would recommend to pick it up, especially if the game goes on sale with the DLC at the same time, as it often does. Just buy the whole thing together.
Yeah.
Play it all, but definitely the DLC. There's so many enemies that even if you don't play the main campaign with somebody, you might want to consider having a friend for the DLC, unless you are camped out and ready to spend 3 hours on one map. I mean, yeah. I don't even know how much time it would take with just one person. I mean, of course, again, I'm looping back to this whole, I actually kill literally everybody. I will hunt them all down. Yes. So not everybody would be doing that. You can just do your mission and go. So I did not have to kill every last one of the Nazis after I killed Hitler. But guess
come on,
what
Nazis.
Yeah.
Guess what I did? Yes.
Well, so. You're up. Yeah.
As a side note, we should definitely play the Sniper Zombie 4, whatever it is called, sometime.
Sniper Zombie Army Trilogy. Oh, the, you mean Zombie Army 4, the new one. Is that out already? Yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
it's
cool. Out. Okay.
It's Left 4 Dead style.
Yeah. Yeah. It sure is. And that one's fun because it's Left 4 Dead style, but it has more of an emphasis on headshots and, you know, like actually targeting your shots more than
Left 4 Dead. Ironically enough, your best strategies are either headshots or just kicking everything.
Melee the fuck out of everything. So that, which melee is a lot of how I used to play Left 4 Dead too. I would snipe or I would melee. So I'm down for that. That's my default setting. So anyway, any questions about Sniper Elite 4 DLC?
No, it sounds meaty. Like the only comment that I have is like, as you guys are describing describing the game, or more specifically naming it and saying, oh yes, Sniper Zombie Army 4 came out or something. And it's like this is a title that like was written into a TV show by somebody who doesn't know what video games are. I understand that the games are fun and not you know, let's say not as dumb as the title would have it believe. They could have called it anything else.
I know, but it's when I first saw it, I was, even though I had played Sniper Elite, I'm like, I don't know if I want to play this, but I it was on sale and I'm like, okay, I'll bite. And then I was like, you know, this is actually a fun game. It's got the most ridiculous title, but whatever, you know. So,
yeah, I mean, okay, like, so Demon's Souls is a dumb name for a video game. And like, what's that apostrophe S doing there? But, you know.
To be fair, it's not nearly as bad as Dark Souls. That is. Dark Souls is like.
It's very Teflon.
Everyone's like. I don't know, goth band name or whatever.
I will let you proceed, Joel.
Okay, so that is the end of that one. The other thing that I have been playing, and I didn't play it for all that long because Dave and I could not handle this. I've been doing a lot of co-op. So the other thing is Trine 4. I said I was going to try Trine 4 because, you know, I finished Trine 3. And just to recap, Trine 1 is fine. It's fun, you know. Trine 2 is amazing. You should play it, especially the DLC. That is where everything shines the most. Trine 3 was a change from 2.5D into 3D, and then also it was unfinished.
Right.
So I thought that Trine 4 was going to pick up where Trine 3 left off. No. It returns to 2.5D, but the animation is in the style of Trine 3, which is not as beautiful. And the story is totally unrelated to Trine 3.
Oh, so, cool. So you have a cliffhanger, you have an unresolved cliffhanger.
Yeah, you have in Trine 3, the story is that like the Trine has broken and this big evil that had been sealed by the three heroes, which were the different Trines, because apparently there's three Trines, you know, okay, or whatever, the mystical artifacts, Trine is one of them. Like, he was unleashed, and the heroes who used to have immortality because of Trine, once the Trine was broken, no longer have immortality, and they're like, oh, fuck, and they're trying to get the pieces of the Trine to put it back together again, and then also fight the big bad thing while they're now mortal again and don't have extra powers. And that just leaves on a cliffhanger, like, you get a couple of pieces of Trine, and then that's the end of the game, the end. And so this just kind of goes off in a totally different direction. And you get a summons from the Astral Academy saying that there is a missing prince who has an urge to learn magic. And of course he comes in contact with the dark arts and becomes consumed by darkness. And that's it. That's your new, and it has nothing to do with anything that was going on in Trine 3. So it's just like, they were just like, nope, we're just going to strike that from the record. Just, you know, retconned it out of existence, I guess. So I was pretty pissed about that.
What's going on with this studio?
I don't know.
But the third one was bad, right? Isn't this a positive thing?
Okay, the third one has some troubled spots because when they went to 3D, it got kind of buggy. But at the same time, the bugs were funny. They didn't stop play or anything, and you know, although in some parts it was kind of hard to navigate with the 3D because Dave actually got a little bit motion sick or whatever, trying to having depth problems with the 3D. it was only in a few parts, and overall the game was still really fun, and it still had the same, you know, kind of spirit of the narrative, and it got really deep into the Trine lore. So, I mean, you know, there's some bad things about it. It's definitely not as good as Trine 2, but it's not a bad game. You just have to go into it knowing your expectations. You can't go into it thinking, oh man, this is going to be just as great as Trine 2. No, it's not. No. But Trine 4, though, although the puzzles have new intentionality to them where the game expects you to use one character subsequent to another in order to complete everything, the levels Dave and I played were just not really all that fun. Reviews say that this game is fun, but lackluster puzzle designs, technical issues, and a lack of difficulty stand in the way of overtaking Trine 2 as best in the series. That's a quote from somebody.
That's everything, isn't it?
Yeah. Which, okay, maybe that's the foot they led on, because Dave and I were both pretty unimpressed with it.
Wait, but that's the only foot. Like, yeah, it's a one-legged game.
Yeah. So we weren't impressed with it, and to the point that we both uninstalled it, and we're like, we're not going to play any more of this. We're just going to play something else. So, yeah, like, it's pretty bad. Like, with Trine 3, we still looked forward to playing that game, even if it was not as good as Trine 2. So my advice to anyone about the Trines in general is play the second one for sure, especially get to the DLC if, you know, you have any goals for gaming in Trine, like co-op with somebody. Play it co-op and get to the DLC. That is really fun. Other than that, Trine 1 and Trine, you know, Trine 1 is similar to, just not as expansive as 2. Mm-hmm. And Trine 3 is kind of like its own little animal off to the side, but it's still in the same vein. So still worth playing. Just understand that it's unfinished.
Yeah.
But 4, I don't even know that I would recommend it unless you really just want more Trine type puzzles, but it doesn't even feel like it has the same heart in it that, you know, even Trine 3 had.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's a bummer. It just kind of petered out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, some of the boss battles in Trine 3 were tricky, but fun, in a way that Trine 2's boss battles weren't. So that Trine 3 even still added some stuff to it, but 4, we just were like, wow, this is feels real uninspired. I don't know. And then, like, all these reviews are like, yeah, you know, this is not the best one in the series, but it still shows that this studio has some life to the Trine series yet. Mm. And I'm like, I don't know about that, but all right.
Sounds like they need to work on something else.
Yeah. So Trine 2 remains my canon. I do not know, you know, I will probably go back and play the first 3 Trines again. I don't think I'm ever going to finish 4. So that's what I got to say about that. Any questions?
No, makes sense.
All right. What has everyone else been playing?
I have one that I can talk about, and it's pretty new. Dennis isn't here, so I can't speak about him with it. He has been playing this as well. I have been playing Star Wars Squadrons.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
In VR?
Yes. I've gone full nerd with this. I've done it in VR, and I went and got a flight stick. I had to like learn acronyms and stuff to get this. For people who know flight sticks, it is a HOTAS, so hand on throttle and stick. I didn't break the bank. I got like the $80 one that was made for the Xbox One and co-branded for Ace Combat. Like, it is, you know, flight sticks can get really, really fucking expensive, but like this is the one that lets you have like the stick in your right hand and all of the buttons and doodads on it, and the throttle in your left hand with all of the buttons and doodads. So you know, you're not messing around with the keyboard. You can keep your, you know, you can have all of your granular control to like match speed with the, you know, enemies that you're dogfighting with and all of that dorky stuff. I'm like disclaiming it and saying like, yes, it's dorky. Like I know wearing a VR headset, understand I like Star Wars just fine, but the thing that I nerd out about the most is not the space wizards. It is not the laser swords. The thing I have always loved the most is the space combat, the flying and stuff like that. And this goes back to the late 90s, like playing X-Wing and TIE Fighter on the PC, playing Rogue Squadron on the N64. Just always been down to be in, you know, to be in an X-Wing or to be in, you know, a TIE Interceptor going and, you know, blasting at people. And question. Yes.
Can you shoot down Porkins in this game?
as far as I can tell, so I've not finished the main campaign as brief as it is. I do not think that they are doing I do not think that they have done a recreation of the Death Star. Maybe that will be DLC down the line.
That seems almost inevitable.
Yeah, that's kind of always been the case. They've always thrown that in, even in games that couldn't really do it that well, you know. Yeah. But yeah, like this is an incredibly
that Pod Racer Death Star was weird.
It's a strange choice. It really is like a worthy follow up to like X-Wing and TIE Fighter. Like it is. You know, a lot of the stuff that you will remember from those games, like the level of the simulation, it kind of hits that same sweet spot between being a sim and being like arcadey. So it is not completely sim like, you know, you're not reading like dials on a dashboard or whatever, but like you're still like managing like how much power goes to which systems, which is kind of just about prioritization. So like as you are going and doing it, you know, doing a run on like a, you know, the turrets, you know, the laser cannons on a Star Destroyer, you're going to want to put all of you're going to want to put more energy into your shields and also focus your shields forward. And like that was something you did in TIE Fighter, and that was something that you do here. And that is like just the right level of like granularity for this to hit. So, you know, there's plenty of stuff to worry about, to where it, you know, there are like lots of considerations that put that kind of tie your performance to more than just kind of twitch reflexes and stuff like that. All of that is, you know, a preamble to saying that this is like just tactically one of the most exciting things to play. It is fucking exhilarating, you guys, to be in the cockpit on this thing, to, you know, be speeding along and shooting stuff in a way that like I wish I could bottle this and send this back to myself when I was like 12 years old, because I am sitting here just completely geeking out, you know, feeding my inner child. And it's fun. It's like super fun to dogfight. And it's not something that I've really done in a game in a while. Like I kind of fell off of the genre. Like I never really got into, you know, Elite Dangerous or, you know, any of the kind of modern ones. And, you know, like the story mode is pretty great. Like it takes place, you know, after Return of the Jedi, and you're playing both sides of the rebellion and the empire that's going into hiding and stuff like that. Like all of the story and presentation is there. Like the characters and writing are pretty good. The missions themselves, nice and varied. Yeah, I feel like that I'm just kind of like diffusely glowing about this, but it's, I am very, very positive about this game. That is kind of like, it feels like one of those things that is made for me, you know.
What's the typical mission flow of this? Or do they have like different variants, like protect people, or is it all just dogfights, like kill X people? Or
I mean, it, like, so broadly, you have like a larger goal that the fleet is trying to accomplish. Like one of the early missions that you do is to steal a Star Destroyer. And so, like, there's all kinds of tasks that go into that, to like taking down the taking down the fleet that's protecting it, dealing with any reinforcements that arrive, disabling the cannons so they can get boarded, and then, you know, escorting them until they can warp. So it's like a bunch of like little mission types that are all kind of, you know, factored in there. So it's, you know, a little bit of X, a little bit of Y, a little bit of Z.
So I watched a little bit of a let's play of this, and by far my favorite part was just the fact that your mechanic is apparently paranoid about droids. Does that like does that continue being a character beat? Because that really made my day.
And not in particular, it doesn't go anywhere. It's just an endearing thing about that character.
Okay, but it at least like isn't just the one scene,
right?
Yeah. Okay, good, because yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Like it feels like they didn't have to do what they did, but by making the actual, you know, campaign mode as cinematic as it is, like in between missions, you can not move around, but like there are different like hotspots you can look around in and like talk to individual people and like get more of their story, learn about them, or learn more about like what is going on in the world around it. And, you know, each of the characters has something that is like good and interesting about them. You know, and when what would have sufficed is probably just what they had in TIE Fighter, which was like mission briefings and stuff like that. Like that would have been fine, but this is aiming at a more story driven, character driven kind of thing than I went into this expecting.
Yeah, the person I watched play a little bit was, I guess, super into whatever is like the new Star Wars books or whatever. So the human that's on your character, you know, introduces yourself, and this person's like, oh, her last name, like the such and such family that makes TIE fighters, and then she's like, yes, that family.
Oh, so, yeah, she defected and is talking about,
yeah. So yeah. So like my understanding is a lot of that content, if you're into like the you know, more recent lore, there's a lot of like Easter eggs and stuff.
Yes. Conversely, you do not need to know any of that. It is, you know, like a lot of Star Wars stuff, appreciable on like an archetype level, you know. Mm-hmm. Like that character is, you know, grew up a spoiled rich girl and like understood that her family was helping commit war crimes, and she relishes destroying the stuff that they're making because she understands, you know, what the stakes are with the rebellion and stuff, you know,
and has a great accent.
Yes. Yeah. It's fucking great. I want to play more of the multiplayer. I'm not very good at it, but I want to get better. Like, and that is like not something I normally would say. I'm not like an online multiplayer kind of person ever at all, even like cooperatively, but like
the start drinking monsters.
But it's like just the act of piloting these ships is really, really good and fun, you know, in or out of VR, you know.
Like, and the multiplayer, is it like competitive? Like, is there team battles, or is it like everyone for themselves? Or
I've only ever done like team battle kind of things. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. It's really good, you guys. It's super good.
No, I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah. And that's all that I've got. In addition to chipping away at Phoenix Wright, don't lose hope, Jala. I apologize that it's taking so long.
That's all good. Yeah. All good.
Any other questions about Star Wars Squadrons?
You also played Gabriel Knight too.
Oh shit. Yeah, I did. So I for streaming and stuff like that, I finished streaming the Dread X collection too. I can't remember like too many specifics, but like it's amazing. Go and buy it. Even if it's only for the David Szymanski game, Scroll Stapler, that one is pretty great. It's a fun little supernatural hunting game. But yeah, the DreadX collection, that's a collection of like short little lo-fi horror games. And then I also started streaming Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Fathers. I just had a real hankering to play it, and I sideways justified throwing a mystery game into Hexcrank because it has supernatural angles to it. You're solving voodoo murders and there are, you know, monsters and stuff about. It's spooky. Yeah. But Gabriel Knight's amazing. It is a very good game, and I'm, you know, super happy to go back to it and check it out because it's been too long since I played it. Yeah. That's me. Ben, how about you?
All right, I got four. I'm gonna talk through the first few pretty quickly, I guess, because I want to get to all the things I want to talk about. I've been playing Nomansky after the DLC, new DLC for it.
Nine.
I guess it's No Man's Sky if you haven't heard our previous episodes. I put in like a good like 20 to 40 hours, and I started a brand new game, like kind of want to start fresh, like see what they had added to it, because I hadn't played it in like maybe a year or two. Built a base, did I think a lot of the like core missions of getting people on your base or whatever. At about the maybe 30 or 40 hour mark, my base started glitching out because it couldn't handle like all the components that I had built, I guess. Admittedly, I built my base on a moon, on a piece of land that was hovering above the moon. So it's kind of like a moon of a moon. And I built a staircase going down from one of the pieces of land to the other piece of land. I don't know if they could like handle that part, but it got bad when like the stairs started clipping out, so you just fall down like a couple hundred feet.
Was there opposing gravity, or was this just like a floating island?
This was a floating island.
Okay.
Above a moon that was around another planet. I don't know. It looked cool.
Okay.
It seemed like a cool spot. But then like I built there's the new thing they added. It's like called exo vehicles, which is kind of like a car that you can go around on the planets. Like I built one of those, but when you park your car on top of it, like it's glitching out, like the platform keeps bugging out. There were like small things that led up to this where it's like the doors wouldn't load on my base until like the very end. So like I would get out of my ship, when I would, get on my landing pad or whatever, and I would have to wait for like the door to load before I could go through it. I should also mention I built a floating base, so I had a staircase going up to that. That was fun.
So you were building off label.
maybe, yeah. But I mean, they should have been able to support all this.
Yeah,
I feel okay, like,
yeah, yeah.
And this was like the only like real base that I had. Like I had, I think, one other tiny one for the first planet that you build one on, but yeah, so I like kind of hard quit after that, after it stopped being able to support the things that I was trying to build, because it's like, this is the main thing I'm here for. Like,
right, yeah.
The mining things is just a means to allow me to build this like base and play around with this sort of thing.
Yeah, and you couldn't build, it didn't honor the base that you wanted to build.
Yeah, so I think overall, like I know like maybe 6 months ago I watched the internet historians Good Ending of No Man's Sky, mm-hmm. and that kind of gave me a more positive impression of the game. Like, yeah, you know, they've like supported it for the last like 4 years. And haven't charged anything for anyone, so that's a good point. Mm-hmm. But now I'm kind of back to being pissed at the game again, because it's like, all right, you added a bunch of things, but this is like literally breaking your game, and like, so it's not running as stably as it did when you first released it, and so now it's like, it's not really a positive change in my opinion. Possibly it could have been a one-off thing. Maybe I just picked a bad place to build it on, and it was abusing like base stuff. But yeah, I was pretty frustrated with that aspect of it.
Your experience is still your experience. Even if it is a one-off thing, it burned you.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I was comparing this to Subnautica in the back of my mind when it was... Subnautica had some buggy things with their bases. Like sometimes fish would swim through it. You could see it from like a million miles away if you had like a glass door or whatever, just because of how they loaded it. But it was never like functionally bad things. Like it was clean in the fact that it you know respected whatever you built. There were constraints with like, you know, structural integrity if you built too much, and maybe now thinking about it now is maybe that's a way for them to cap the number of things that you could build in any one spot, which that's a good idea.
Yeah,
didn't even notice it. But yeah, so comparing it to that, it's like, if that's one of the core mechanics of the game, like, you better have that down pat. I don't know. Anyway, I mean,
like, what you're describing in Subnautica is like benign bugs, you know, like the, yeah, like that does yeah, not yeah. like implicate progress. I mean, for another, you know, for see also for benign bugs, what Jal is describing in Trine 3, right? Where like, oh, some like goofy fun stuff would happen, but nothing that stops you from going forward or sets you back. Like losing an entire base, it, like that's extremely discouraging. You know?
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it other than
Okay.
Still whatever. Yeah. But all right, onwards. I played Fall Guys season 2 that came out within the last week. It is okay. They kind of the change what they did is they added like maybe, I don't know, half a dozen to a dozen new game types. And they're kind of mixed in with the season 1 games. But then they've also done a lot of like kind of facelifts on the season 1 games where they've like kind of added a lot of like new mechanics to them, and that you kind of have random different variants of a game. So an example is they have one game called Fall Ball, which is essentially it's similar to Rocket League. There's like a bouncy ball that you have to fight to try and get in the goal. I think there might be there might even be two of them at the beginning. And so you're just trying to either play defense or try and do offense and score on the other person. And it's like you have 2 minutes to score, and whoever scores the most wins. They like drove this game into the ground by the end of season 1. If you had an even number of teams by like when it was getting down to like under 20 people, you'd play a fall ball, then you'd play the finals, which it was fine because it's not like it's not a terrible game, but you just played it a lot.
I mean, it works against a game that is otherwise about variety.
Yeah, I'm not trying to complain too much about it, but I wanted to bring this up as what they did in season 2 is they added a bunch of variants to this. So like there's one where it starts with 4 balls instead of 2. There's ones where they have these swinging hammers on the corners of each of these things, so that if you have to like drive the ball down the middle, because if you try and drive it down the side, the hammer will probably knock it back against you. And then there's one where there's like a spinning platform in the middle that just rotates, and so when at face off when the ball lands on it, it, you know, kind of goes in kind of like random directions, and it's kind of hard to play around. And it's harder for people to get exactly in the middle to bounce the ball and like to shoot it towards your goal because you have a spinning platform there. I think that's the design behind it, which is good design. So all of that's to say is that they made some good quality of life improvements on the season 1 games that they've had. And that's good because like what was kind of like a bad note against it at the end of season 1 is that like the meta had been figured out, and so like everybody was just doing the same strategy every time, and it started to become less interesting. So it's really good that they made like these sorts of improvements. However, when you play the game, it still feels very similar to playing like the season 1 game. There might be like a few new games that they've introduced in the season 2 one, which has like a medieval theme. But it's totally possible that in a run of like 5 or 6 mini games, only one of them is a season 2 game and 5 of them are season 1 games. So it doesn't feel like a completely new type of game. It's just like a kind of iterative approach of like small changes that are admittedly in the right direction. One negative is one thing they've kind of reverted to is how well their servers work when they launched season 1. So it was like, we played maybe 2 or 3 games, but there was at least like 4 or 5 times where we'd started and one person didn't make it or everyone got kicked out. So we had to do a lot of like party revamps and stuff like that. So that's something that they need to figure out in the next like week or two. But I'm sure, I mean, they fixed that with season 1, so I'm sure they'll fix it with this as well. But it's a mixed bag.
I'm sure the new season has renewed interest and caused traffic to spike again or maximum current players or whatever. So that's probably a stress thing too,
for sure. But they should also anticipate higher traffic. So I don't know. I don't have too much to say about it other than small improvements, but
cool.
Kind of the same as season 1. But anyway, whatever. I got a crown though. I was happy about that.
Oh, you awesome.
Anyway, all right. Onwards. I started playing Hades.
Oh shit!
Yay!
Has anyone played that yet on the podcast? I can't remember if we talked about
that before or not. That's actually one of my games for this.
Cool, you should both hit it. Yeah, co-op.
Let's see, I
have not played it since I spoke about it last, but I played a few runs. Not complete runs, but just a couple of weeks ago, kind of around the time it first came out. I like the game. It's really good.
So it's a roguelike game. I think the best comparison I can think of is Dead Cells. It feels very similar gameplay wise to that, even though it's a very different theme and different like kind of format. Mm-hmm. It's not like a 2D like Dead Cells. It's more of a orthogonal.
It's isometric. It's like a more fluid roguelike Bastion. It ultimately is. Yeah.
Although I would say I think one of the big differences almost from this compared to Dead Cells or something like that is that it's not all that roguelike. It definitely is you're going to die and play again, but there is a very strong progression focus.
Yeah.
But isn't that something that a roguelike has?
To varying degrees.
A meta progression system?
Yeah, although...
Across runs?
Although I'd say, for example, in Dead Cells, you don't really get stronger. You just unlock new options.
I thought the weapons that you got leveled up over time... Not true. I could be wrong.
Maybe
I haven't played that game
in I'm not sure.
I know your weapon options expand as you play, but that's not, getting more powerful. But you're right to point out, in Hades, there's a system where the more you play the game, the more powerful your character gets.
Mm-hmm.
I like that system. I think it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. I am curious to know, how much you need it. So, I'm curious to know, how easy it is to beat the game if you have none of that meta upgrades, unlocked. Because it seems like it would probably be pretty hard / impossible to do, maybe.
That has to be something that you can accomplish with the curses or whatever it is. I forget what they call it here, but the drawbacks.
The chaos?
Yeah.
The chaos one? Yeah.
Yeah, the drawbacks that you can take before an individual run.
Oh, maybe I don't know that, actually. Yeah, the thing I'm thinking of... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm not sure I've unlocked that feature yet, the drawbacks.
Yeah. Okay, so just... to kind of go over the game more again, is that the story concept is you're, I forget the person's name, but the son of Hades, trying to escape hell. I don't know if anybody knows the main character's name.
Zagreus?
Oh, Zagreus. All right. And so basically you just go level to level, and each level you have to fight a certain number of people. It's like a self-contained battle. And then you get a mini reward at the end of it. It could be some sort of economy for the meta upgrade, or it could be some sort of weapon that will help you on that run only. Mm-hmm. And there's four different stages to escaping hell, with boss battles at each one. I assume I've only made it to the third stage of the four, I think. The skin of this though is a lot of people that you're interacting with are Greek gods, and I think it's Greek gods. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things maybe I'll ask you. So how far have you gotten in this, David? And what sort of things have you upgraded so far?
Sure. So the only extra weapon I've unlocked is the bow, which I strongly dislike.
Okay.
And I've made it to the second stage twice and died fairly quickly thereafter.
Because it doesn't have rails anymore.
It's also been I don't know, both of those times I was spec'd for range combat. And it seems like the first level or the first area, range combat is a big advantage, whereas the second level, you're fighting in very small stages. And so it seems like that's actually a distinct disadvantage.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't quite figured out the meta yet. So I don't know. I don't even know what a good strategy is. I think I've tried to do the Y attack, or which is the area of effect attack. I think I always try and upgrade that one as much as possible.
Sure.
And then everything else is kind of supplemental to that. Just because I think the X attack, the direct attack, is a lot harder to do, especially if you have like a bunch of tiny guys. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So I don't know if you go with upgrading like the X, like simple attack or whatever, if the damage on that is like significantly more than the Y attack to the point where it's worth doing that.
Yeah. See, I tend to just almost exclusively use the regular attack.
Okay.
I haven't found the timing of the special attack to work that well for me.
Okay.
Although, I mean, it varies. Like, I use the special attack a lot on the bow because I don't like the way the bow, you have to, like, charge it up.
So, I haven't actually unlocked any weapons. So, what does this do when you have the bow?
So, the bow actually works fairly similar to your cast. So, basically hold down the attack button. And you stop moving, and arrow appears on your screen, showing which direction you're going to shoot, and also how far it's going to go. And it charges over the course of like somewhere between a quarter second and a half a second, and then you release to fire. So it's not like it's a charge up mechanic, like, you know, one of these like, oh, you have to be super careful where you do it. But to me, it feels to me like it doesn't fit with the flow of the game where, you know, other than this is very much a game about like, dashing around and dodging and those sorts of things. And so personally, I just don't like it. On the other hand, your special attack is just you basically shoot out like a 45 degree arc of multiple arrows. And so the one successful run I had with that, I basically got a ability that every time an enemy is hit by your second attack, they, after a few seconds, they take damage, like extra damage. And so I basically just ignored my actual weapon and cheesed using the secondary damage.
Was that the hangover upgrade from the god of like festivals or whatever?
No, this was actually from Ares. It was I think it's called Doom. So basically, like some sort of like big spike appears above them, and then after a second, like falls on them.
Okay, gotcha.
So
that's cool. I haven't done anything with a weapon unlock system. That's all in like the last room before you go out on a run, right?
Exactly.
And it costs keys to unlock them. Yeah.
So I feel like one of the things we've kind of danced around some is, you know, one of the big elements is, like you said, a lot of the characters, the various Greek gods, and your builds are basically you getting various boons from these gods that each have a very specific theme. So like like you said, Dionysus is hangover, which is basically poison. Artemis is critical hits. Athena is the ability to deflect enemy ranged attacks, things like that. And so it's, you know, that's a lot of like your, you know, within level or within game builds. The other thing that I think is maybe one of my favorite things of this is the ability to give the various characters nectar in order to befriend them. Have you messed around with that much?
I have. That's one thing that I thought was impressive in this game is there's so much like progression in everything you do. As you mentioned, you can give this gift to pretty much any character you interact with in the game. And typically in response, they'll give you an item and you can pick the run with starting with one item. And the item will have some sort of effect. So like one is like you start off with 50 more HP. One is like you start off with this much more gold if you want. The thing that's interesting is all the items are upgradable over on the meta level. So it's like if you engage in this many attacks with this item, then it'll upgrade and become like a better version of itself. So that's like a lot of fun to play around with. Some of them, like I got the Athena one, which is interesting, where it's the first boon you get is always an Athena one. And then it increases the chance that she drops like an epic or higher item when you first meet her. But yeah, that makes for a really like long, like a long-term game element where it's like, yeah, I would like to unlock all the different items with all the different gods and see what they have to do with one another. I think the one that I'm most proud of is like, I was able to get one to Sisyphus, who's like a random encounter you can get in the first world. Unfortunately, the item's not that great. It's like your weapon does more damage as long as you don't have a boon from any of the other gods. So it's like, well, it's nice at the beginning, but it's telling you to not use this entire mechanic of the game. So
yeah.
So I think the other thing I really like about it is there's unique dialogue for each of these, and they do a very, very good job of kind of filling out the characters' personalities and their kind of their motivations and interactions. So for example, some of the ones I've given is you can actually like give one after you basically kill the first boss. It's the underworld, so no one stays dead, and so you can then give her like this present, and your character just kind of awkwardly is like, "Yeah, I know you're just doing your job, and so I wanted to get it for you," and stuff like that. Similarly, one of the best chemistries in the game is between Zagreus and Hades himself, where it's basically him being, why can't you, just grow up and, be a good son and respect all the, work I do for you, that sort of thing. Where it's, and your character kind of being rebellious and sort of that sort of dynamic.
That's and the emotional so, core of the game.
Right. And you can give him this gift, and it's very explicitly like Zagreus like fishing for emotional affirmation, and Hades just like missing that.
Oh god.
And so, like, and there's a ton of them. The character I really want to give it to, because it's my favorite character, but I haven't got a chance to, is Ben. Have you seen the Gorgon that is your maid? Yes.
Yeah.
This like super super like kind of hypochondriac Gorgon whose job is just to clean up your house.
Oh god.
Like an awkward anime version of Medusa.
Yep.
So one thing I was really impressed by is, so you have this like codex or whatever that has information on all people, and it will unlock more information about them as you talk to the character more. So it's like, if you have 20 conversations with Hades, then you'll get this much more information about him, which was like, I've never seen that mechanic in a game. I can't recall one. I'm sure it's been done before, but
I have not seen that one. Supergiant did this a few times. They had a little bit of an inkling of this in Transistor, you like found pieces of code that represented the programs, and also like every weapon was also, or every attack was also a character, or is strongly related to a character. And then Pyre also has, like, because it has this really visual novel kind of component to it, has like a very strong like dictionary and biography system that does the same thing, where you will find like expanded biographies and pages about their book as you make choices and play with characters more. So
gotcha. So they're just following in the same footsteps then.
Yeah. Like it's the, like know. A lot of this is Supergiant making similar, expanding on things that have been present since the start, since Bastion.
Another kind of angle on this is, during a run, I can't tell if it's just like, kind of dynamic, or if it explicitly will sometimes choose two of the gods, but I've definitely had times where there's often a dialogue snippet when you get one of the gods' boons, and where they've referenced the other gods I've gotten boons from during that run. So there was one instance where I got stuff from Artemis, you know, goddess of the hunt, and Ares, god of war, that kind of had a like back and forth going on, like war versus hunting, and kind of the dynamics of that, which is kind of fun.
I'm surprised Super Dragon was able to get the copyright for the Greek god of war from Sony.
Did they have to?
I'm joking. I thought that would be a fun, dumb thing to say. And it was. I had a lot of
America's
fun.
However, everybody was like, stop.
Yeah, I mean, we do live in a, you know, corporate dystopia, so.
Yeah.
Because we own your guts.
The other thing is, well, one, just the storyline is, you know, much deeper than it would originally seem. And one of the angles I like on this is, they kind of play some with, you know, not in like a Disgaea type thing, but they do kind of play some with like hell being a bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that, you know, the fact that like, you know, as you're running off doing thing, you know, Hades is, you know, kind of running the place and, you know, making decisions about how it operates and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. You know, just they get a lot of really entertaining mileage out of that. Like most of the NPCs that aren't actually the gods that you run into are very much treated as basically being employees.
Yeah. They're doing like a banality of evil kind of thing.
Right. Exactly.
So. Trying to think what else to say about this game. It's very fun, but I also feel very stressed out when I play it. Like I can only do a couple of rounds. I get that like Rocket League feeling where it's like my heart hurts and I'm like, I'm gonna play something else.
Hence why I have not played this game, even though it's blowing up my Twitter everywhere.
Oh, everybody is posting about it. Everybody's horny for it.
Yeah.
So I think the one knock against, I will say, is the sound mixing. Zagreus's voice is just incredibly soft.
Are you talking in combat, or are you talking when you're going about and interacting with characters?
When you're going about and interacting with characters, like he very much is entirely, you know, written to be just super, super chill all the time. I guess appropriately enough, you know, somewhat similar characterization to like Dante.
Yeah.
But that translates into him just like never raising his voice. But I'm playing it with, I guess normally I set my speakers to about 40% volume.
Right. You're in an apartment. I'm
playing with it at 100% volume and I still have a little bit of trouble hearing it.
Hmm. That's a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, it's never been a time where like I couldn't hear it, but it's just very, very weird that like it is so incredibly soft spoken.
Do you normally play with subtitles?
Yeah, I do. Okay. So that helps.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't thrown in because everything you guys are saying matches my experience with it. I just love that everything is about choices. Oftentimes, yeah. Choices between one or two different things that each have very clearly delineated results. Right.
Yeah. I think the most interesting choice is like where it's like do something to help your run versus do something to help the metagame.
Yes.
Because then it's like, how well do you really think you're doing right now?
Well, yeah.
So do you know, like, in actual Greek mythology, does the afterlife suck as much as it does in this game?
I guess it depends if you're in power or not. It doesn't suck for everyone, right?
I don't know. They make it pretty clear that, like, the vast, vast majority of humanity basically ends up in something comparable to like the Christian hell.
Yeah, it depends on different, like, I've seen so many different depictions of it that I actually don't know I couldn't tell you what, like, the Bullfinch's text is on the Greek concept of the afterlife. Everything kind of portrays it as being pretty, pretty fucking awful. But then I guess everybody goes there because you gotta, you know, you be buried with the coin in your mouth so you can pay Charon, you know? So I don't know if it's like a, if it is designed to be a punishment or if that is something that is kind of backmasked on from, you know, Christianity and related religions. I don't know.
My prediction for the game is that, because like the entire game you're talking to these Greek gods and they're like, yeah, get to Mount Olympus, come to heaven, you know, blah, blah, blah. My prediction is like they're going to have some ulterior motive. They're going to be the bad guys. You're going to you're going to be like, oh, Hades is going to be the hero who defends me when they like turn against me or something like that. It's going to be like a Portal 2 ending.
That would be in line with the
Greek title of the game.
Or no, I mean, just with the Greek, you know, the way things usually go. You know, there's nothing that makes the gods of Olympus any better or less petty than Hades himself. So,
yeah, gotcha. I just want the sequel where I can play as Cerberus. I think that's my wish. So,
God.
I guess one other plot point I'll raise that's just kind of fun is I really like their depiction of just the regular people that are in Hades. Mm-hmm. That, you know, they're kind of these just, you know, indistinct like ghost things, but the only way they can communicate is they'll periodically have like emojis appear above their heads.
Yeah.
And yeah, they can be very, very entertaining depending on your actions.
It's a little bit like Planescape Torment with the little attendants who can only speak by having symbols appear above their heads, like in little rebuses. Yeah. Yeah, it's very good.
All right. Anything else on Hades?
Nope.
No, I'd like to play more of it.
All right. I got one more game in the hopper that I wanted to talk
about. Okay.
All right. So this is what I think the game of October will be for me is I've been playing Phasmophobia.
Oh, shit. You texted me about this. Yes.
Have you guys heard of this game?
Only for
you. I'm not even sure those are words.
Phasmophobia is the fear of ghosts. This is a good spooky game that's in pre-release. It's a four-player game. You role-play as ghost hunters trying to go through an abandoned house and figure out what kind of ghost is haunting it. I look down on ghost hunters and think it's in the same vein as flat earthers. I'm sorry if that's offensive to anyone. But I love role-playing as a ghost hunter in a video game. Yeah, I think it's a whole bunch of fun.
Because there's like bullshit rules about it, and it's fun to walk through them, yeah.
Yeah. So the premise of a run is you start outside of a house, you're in this truck, and you have a bunch of equipment. You have an item inventory of three, so you basically go on runs into the house with items. You kind of set the items down, and you kind of bring more things in. The goal is to classify what kind of ghost it is, and then you have like three other like side objectives that you need to do. So initially you want to try and find out where the ghost is in the house, and then you can kind of set up shop in that room. So to do that, they have this thing called an EMR sensor, which looks like, it looks maybe like
an electronic medical records.
Did I say EMR? EMR.
Interference or frequency.
It's something like that. But it looks like, it looks like some sort of like electrical engineering tool or something. It's like you're testing like
it's
the charge.
Because of
something.
It is.
Okay. So it has five different lights on it. And so if anything above a one means the ghost is there. And if it hits five, then that's a piece of evidence that you can use to classify what kind of ghost it is. The other way you can find ghosts is if there's thermometers. And so, like, as you're pointing them room to room, sometimes they'll drop in temperature.
Spots. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where the ghosts are. So, yeah. So, like, that part's fun. That's a way to, like, on your first, like, run through the house, that's where you can kind of figure out where it is. And then you can bring in the video cameras and set them up. After you set them up and turn them on, you can go back to the van and look for ghost orbs, which is where if you turn into night vision, there's like tiny white dots that'll float around. And that's a piece of evidence on what kind of ghost it is. You can set down books that they can write in. You can use black lights to look for handprints. You can use a what looks to be a radio, but it's called a spirit box to try and communicate with the ghost. So all of these are possible pieces of evidence you can find to classify what kind it is. But things turn more horror-based after, like, 5 minutes. You have 5 minutes of kind of, like, the ghost won't mess with you too bad.
It's like the procedural portion, yeah.
Yeah, and then after that, you possibly might get hunted down by the ghosts. So that's when, like, scary things start happening. Doors will start shutting and locking. You need to start, like, hiding in closets, because otherwise what will happen is the ghost will find you, walk up to you, and kill you. And if it kills you, you lose all the items that you brought with you, and that's kind of the main economic portion of the game, is you go on these runs to make a little bit of money. That's the piece that I was really happy with, is it seems like a very realistic approach to what ghost hunting would actually pay out, where it's like, oh, I did 3 hours of work and got $20. Like, cool. I drove across the country to do this. But you use that money to buy more items, more tools that you can use in the missions. There's things like crucifixes, smudge sticks, which is like sage. Mm-hmm. There's motion sensors. There's all kinds of types of things like that. You buy those because some of the objectives will be to find the ghost through that, or some of them like have actual effects. Like the crucifix can stop a ghost from killing someone in a room if it's placed there, if it's a certain kind of ghost. Mm-hmm. All of this is a lot of fun. A lot of times you have to try and take pictures of the ghost, which is a lot of fun, because it's like you have to on the radio say its name over and over to piss it off. And so you have like two people with a camera waiting, and then one person like calling it out, and you have to like try and snap a picture and run out of the house before it kills you. It is a lot of fun. It's a really good social game to play. It plays up to four people in a party. It's perfectly timed for Spooktober. I highly appealing to you. We should play it on a Friday night hex crank.
Yeah, we ought to. Yeah, and it's also it's not very costly. Cool, that sounds very fun.
$13. Yeah, it's $13. I've already bought. Oh, good.
As a side note, you might check out Hell Sign sometime.
Yeah, it's on my wish list. I remember.
I thought this sounded familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'd be curious to see like how they differ and how close. Yeah, this one looks, I guess the presentation of the game, you could compare, do you remember that one game where it's like you fix up a house and sell it and you do that over and over again?
Yeah, House Flipper, yeah.
Yeah, this game looks very similar to that, except it's at night and it's spooky, you know, like it, but otherwise...
How has no one made a ghost house flipper?
Oh, so like specifically selling a haunted house?
Yeah, where you have to like... I could see there's like two different paths you go. You either have to exterminate the ghost, or you have to set it up to like hide the effects of the ghost until after someone's bought it.
Yeah.
Or you advertise. I mean, like this is the plot of an episode of Nathan for You, where he hooks up with a realtor and says, "Hey, you're going to be the realtor who sells haunted houses." So we're gonna have you team up with an exorcist and like sell murder houses.
As a side note, I just saw Lizzie Borden's house is back on the market.
Oh shit. Huh. I was about to make a joke about the price being chopped, but or you know, being sliced, cut in half, but that would be in poor taste probably. So yeah, instead of making the joke, I talk about my urge to make the joke, and that distances me from it, giving me culpability or a lack of culpability. There we go.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. No. This sounds great, and it doesn't matter if it's like janky like House Flipper, because jank is good.
It is janky.
Yes.
you can clip through your partner's faces like nobody's business. That's where the real horror.
Well, but it's also, I mean, like it's designed for VR too.
It is.
Yeah. Jank isn't bad. Jank should preserve jank, everybody. Jank 2020, jank forever.
It's endearing. Yes. It's endearing jank.
Yeah. Yeah.
When your character looks up, like at the ceiling, the model just bends back at his waist at like a 90-degree angle. It.
It's so good. But like, you know, even with simple assets, like light is, you know, light or darkness rather covers all sins. Still makes stuff scary. Like, yeah.
It's good.
Love it.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Nice.
Talking to way too long.
David, what have you been playing besides Hades?
Sure. So other than that, I gave, I think it's Genshin Impact a try.
Oh, the like gachapon Breath of the Wild that I see people talking about.
yeah. And that is basically sums up a great deal of the game. It is basically Breath of the Wild plus gachapon plus Animus.
Okay.
So
what system is this for? I see people talking about it like it's a mobile game, but it might just be, I might be confusing that because it has a mobile games monetization system. Like, how are you playing it? What is it available so for?
I'm playing it on PC. I think this is one of those, it's on all the things games.
Okay.
How do you spell Genshin?
Genshin.
Yes.
I do not believe this is on Steam.
Okay.
Okay, no, it's not on Steam. I'm sorry. It is on PC, though.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's on iOS and Android, too, so they're... Yeah.
Yeah, and the overall plot line is fairly generic, like fantasy world where there's a whole bunch of elemental gods, and I don't know, right now there's a dragon killing people, and I want him not to kill people. like... The actual like storyline seems fairly generic, but you know it kind of revolves around the quality of kind of the Breath of the Wild gameplay. So you know it's got the kind of fun arcadey combat, and then also a very very extensive cooking system. And oh, wow. So you're. Running around, collecting various plants and fish and meat and things like that, and then cooking it for buffs. Similarly, it has a surprisingly in-depth slate of NPCs. If you go into a town, pretty much all of the characters have dialogue, and I actually just read there's an article on Polygon kind of going into this, like a lot of the characters actually will reference other NPCs, or you'll have some interaction with them and then later on get a mission related to that interaction, that sort of thing.
Oh, that's cool. So it's not like basic NPC, basic NPCs, NPCs, like these are characters who have relationships.
Exactly. They do at least a little bit of like a life cycle thing, and where like I've seen NPCs will sometimes be certain situations, sometimes others, and it leads me to believe that they have some sort of like habits related to like the time of day or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's necessarily like Skyrim level, but it appears to at least somewhat be a thing.
That was a thing in Breath of the Wild. Different people would come out and be in different places during the day, just because of the simulation. Yeah. Can I ask just a very basic question that relates to kind of the top level premise that we laid out, the gachapon Breath of the Wild? So gachapon machine. People here in America, we know them as like the bubble machine in front of Walmart where you put in the 50 cents and then a little cheap toy, little homie figurine comes out, muscle figurine. And it's random. And the fun is you don't know what you're going to get. In this game where you put in, a virtual currency that maybe you can buy with real currency, what comes out in the bubble? Like, what are you paying for a random chance to get?
Sure. So the main thing is upgrade components and then characters. So you unlock four basic characters by default.
Mm-hmm.
And then, there's a couple of things where, for example, your first 20 pulls, you can basically get like a... 10 for the price of 8 type of thing, and they're guaranteed to contain one of the characters. So basically you get about five characters for free, but then all the rest of the characters are somewhat random.
And there are 24 total. Are the different characters just cosmetic, or they have different abilities?
Have different abilities, and you know, there's definitely like a meta and, you know, a tier to them.
Right. Like, oh, this is a rare one. This is the metal Oopa, in Steins;Gate's terms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And so that, I would say my biggest concern with the game right now, honestly, is its kind of monetization and specifically the fact that, you know, it's completely random.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in order to be a good game, it's going to need, you know, some way to kind of, you know, break out of that random. And then I think also it seems like, you know, right now they definitely are fairly generous with their, you know, with the, you know, kind of free pulls you get and, you know, the ones you can earn from like, completing achievements in games and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you look at the, if you look at the actual in-game, or rather the actual sustainable ways you can go about leading pulls or getting pulls, and compare that to the percentages, they're very, very low. So, yeah. You know, it gets to a point of, like, getting a end-game character, like, being guaranteed to get it, would take maybe something on the order of like 3 months.
Yeah, they're on whale hunts. Yeah,
right. And so ultimately, I think, you know, I think what it's going to come down to, like, I'm sure it will be financially successful either way.
Right, because it's a slot machine. It is designed. Right. It is designed to exploit people's like cognitive biases about statistics.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
In terms of, like, does this ultimately end up being a good game? I think it's going to come down to, like, do they adjust this? Because, you know, technically it is still in kind of pseudo beta.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I think ideally they adjust it at least for the Western market.
Probably. I mean, they probably have pretty granular control about rates for different places, and they can,
right,
you know,
exactly. And so, like, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I think it could be solid if they just leave as is. Right now it's not.
I guess here's a question: are you going through like a single player campaign where there's like in Breath of the Wild where there are four big main dungeons you have to go through? Like, is that what you're doing? Is this like an MMO thing? What?
So it's, I mean, to the degree that it's open world, it definitely has some, you know, MMO feeling to it, but there definitely is a single player campaign with, you know, dialogue and, you know, cutscenes and stuff like that.
Right.
If you're, you know, I think, I personally find it, you know, none of it is particularly earth shattering or noteworthy. It can be, if you're into like anime kawaii stuff, it definitely can hit that note. Some you mm-hmm. have a little floating like angel girl thing that is kind of your sidekick.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, who is, you know, can be very entertaining. For example, one of the very first dialogue options is someone asks you, like, what is that? And one of the possible answers is emergency food supply.
that's like something Guts would say about Puck in Berserk.
Probably.
That's a reference. You had your Star Wars one, I have my Berserk one. We all get one.
No, okay. I'm not judging, but yes, that sounds very much like the dynamic we're getting at here.
Right.
I want a game that turns into Pan's Labyrinth. That'll be my reference.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, if you're into that, definitely a thing. I guess the other thing, I don't know if this is a thing they directly stole, or you know what I mean.
Fast follow. Inspired. We prefer fast follow.
Yes, they directly fast swallowed from Breath of the Wild.
Fast swallow. I didn't mean to interrupt. I didn't mean to drag this out, and that's puerile. Sorry, I misheard you.
Okay, no problem. Fast followed from Breath of the Wild is the elemental system is a very big part of this.
Yeah, they added a bunch more of them.
What's the elemental system?
So the way this works basically is one, like each of your characters is, you know, has powers. Well, I guess I should say you have a party of four characters you can switch between at any time. They each have one, element that their abilities use, and either by environmental effects, like if it's raining or if someone's on fire or something like that. Okay. Using your abilities, an enemy can basically have a status effect for that ability. And then if you use a different element on them, the effects will combine and have some sort of effect. So water and electricity will cause them to like chain lightning to enemies around them. Ice and fire will cause them to basically take extra damage. Have like a melt effect. There's steam. There's all sorts of things.
Okay.
Nice. And similarly, you can also like if you're fighting in a field, like it can catch on fire, things like that.
Nice.
Yeah. So was that at all in Breath of the Wild?
It sounds similar to like Divinity Original Sin, more than Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm. No, the elements were a little bit more about basically what would do damage to you over time and how you were, prepared for it. So if you were to be going into the winter world, you would want to get the special warm clothes, right? And that would also protect you from ice, from ice damage and stuff.
That makes sense. Yeah, I haven't seen anything like that yet, although it wouldn't surprise me if that was a thing.
Yeah. I mean, this sounds like an awful lot of, it sounds like more of a game than I expected it to be based on what people were saying on Twitter. But then again, also on Twitter, I saw somebody say, or I saw at least two people say like, this game is fun, but the like end game materials are pretty grindy. They should fix that. It's like
JRPG, right?
Well, no, but also like that's how they make money is by making the stuff you want grindy, so you pay to get it. Yeah,
I think the issue is honestly it either needs to be like you don't have to grind, or like there's some fairly obvious like healthy way to have a relationship with this game. Or there needs to be some sort of out where you can, in effect, like pay a monthly fee.
Yeah. Where you can just play it as like, hey, a single player experience, please.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Or not single player, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Cause, Warframe sort of does this where like, if you want to, you can just, a new character comes out, I don't know, every month, every couple months, and you could just like, when it comes out, drop $20 to buy that character, and that be just what you do, and it's basically equivalent to having a subscription to an MMO.
We're coming up on a reasonable time for the segment here. Did you have anything else that you wanted to say about Genshin Impact? I don't mean to put the music on to play you off. It's just episode's getting long.
that's really all I have. Only other thing, and I think this just goes with the Breath of the Wild thing, but has a interesting climb mechanic and then a big focus on like hang gliding.
Gliding is different. the climb mechanic and the stamina kind of drain like under different conditions, that is very much a Breath of the Wild thing.
Yeah. It does make me kind of wish that they would add in the Dragon's Dogma, like ability to climb on enemies and stick pointy things in them.
But... go full Shadow of the Colossus.
Yep. But I think that's probably outside the scope of what they're trying to do.
Nice. But you're having a good time?
Yeah. Good stuff.
I don't know that I have any other questions about it. Cool. That sounds like a segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then very kindly you answer it
or else
you face the consequences. Dennis posted this last week. We're going to continue with this one here because you all wrote good answers for this. Dennis asked, what video game character deserves their own reality dating show, and most importantly, what would it be called? So doing some little creative prompts here. And I'm going to get us started here with Arup, who says Mondo Zappa from Killer is Dead. The show would be called Ogling and Gifts with Zappa. All right. Killer is Dead is the one where you get points. Like there's a little mini game where you zoom in on ladies' bulgy parts. Yeah. Okay. Now I know what you mean. There we go. Okay. I got confused about which Suda 51 game this was. Yeah.
Wait, the oogling doesn't narrow it down. Yeah.
No, it doesn't. Let's see here. Jello, what does Ollie say?
Ollie's got a long as hell answer. Kratos. He's a widower and a single father who has strong protective instincts. Now he needs someone who can help him raise his little boy. After years of fighting, he has proven himself the god of war, but now the real question is, can he become the god of love?
No, that's Aphrodite.
Warning. Warning. A relationship with Kratos can be damaging to your health.
I mean, his wife in the 2018 one got to die of natural causes.
Well, I mean, to be fair, an axe to the head is a natural cause.
I mean, okay, in fairness, everybody dies because of heart failure.
Are axes naturally occurring?
Yes, they are naturally occurring. Yeah,
don't be naive. Don't be naive, Ben.
All right.
Let's see here. David, what does Stuart say?
Stuart says, show me your moves. Where Captain Falcon looks for the boyfriend who could fulfill his impossible standards.
Yeah.
That also would be a great name for a celebrity dance show.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to think of a fun pun with F-Zero, but I couldn't. I assume if there was a good one, Stuart would have probably found it. Stuart's a funny guy.
Yeah,
I know. Go for it.
All right. Ben, what does Steven say?
I'm glad I get to read this one. Tony Hawk's Pro Dater.
It's very good. reminder, Tony Hawk's Twitter is very good because he mostly talks about people not recognize him or kind of recognizing him. It is a wonderful existential horror story every time you look at it. David writes, Breath of the Wild Link in You Take My Breath Away. After realizing the entire continent wants in his tunic, Impa sets up the show to help Link navigate love and lust in a post-Ganondorf Hyrule. Yeah, once you can stop worrying about Oblivion, eventually, you know, you can start.
Nobody in the
future.
Breath of the Wild world really seems to be all that worried about Oblivion in the first place. But
that's the thing. Yeah, I said it, and for the purpose of the joke, yes. But also, Breath of the Wild is the kindest apocalypse that ever existed. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I want that one, not 2020 as we are experiencing it.
Right. No, I'm terrified every day, except for the 5 seconds after I wake up where I think maybe I'm dead. Jala.
that's too long for a title, Cole. You need to narrow it down, right?
I will try and be pithier. Jala, what does Dave say?
Dave says Solid Snake hosts, and this is like four different shows of varying creep levels. A Box Made for Two, Cakes in a Box, This Cake's for You, and Sneaking into Your Heart.
I don't understand what the cake is for.
Because I was talking about Snake's butt.
Oh, because of, yeah, I forgot about that slang. Yeah. I forgot about that slang because I'm not a hip person. Yeah.
See, I feel like there's also somewhere in here a like cake boss joke.
Boss. That's one that he didn't come up with. Yeah. Good job. Yeah. And my okay, so here's the thing. I was telling him about the multiplayer, and one of my various answers, because I've got a lot of very short responses to this, was Solid Snake Buns and Roses.
Mm.
So. So nice. That's where he started with the cake thing.
Buns of the Patriots.
Ah, there you go.
Diamond dongs. Sorry, Sorry, we're right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, I know.
Juvenile jokes and Metal Gear like... Solid. Ooh, boy. Just rubbing my hands together greedily. Ah, yes. Oh,
your
man.
Time has come.
David, what does Dan say?
Dan says, Juan
Aguacate?
Aguate? Aguacate?
I believe so.
From Guacamole 2, The Romantic Timeline.
I wish I knew anything about that game so I could comment on it. I will assume that's clever.
Yeah. I feel like anything that could I'm just imagining this as what do they call them, like telenovelas or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
indeed.
Let's see here, Ben. What does Alexander say?
Alexander says, for some reason, my gut instinct is Dante from Devil May Cry. I can't think of another character that is surrounded by beautiful ladies who never shows the slightest interest. The true ace icon.
Ooh. Uh-huh.
Do you call the show Date May Cry? Mm. Dante must commit. No matter no matter what, if there isn't a style gauge on screen showing how well the date is, they're doing it wrong.
I mean, to be fair, nothing says, nothing gets the women going like when you simply refer to her as lady.
I mean, this has to have been at least pitched or maybe developed, and who knows if it did. Has there been an ace or aero dating show? Because like ace people, they have relationships. I'd be very curious to see that actually.
Yeah,
what is an ace
asexual
thing? Oh, okay.
Yeah, and aero's aromantic. There's a distinction between the two of them, but okay. Yeah.
This is a segue to our next answer, I guess.
Maybe. Who knows? Sorry. Yeah, let's pick up with that. That is very good. Skylar writes, Phoenix Wright of Ace Attorney fame. He's a Ace Attorney, that's very good. He's a plucky defense attorney by day, but his nights get so lonely. I have no better name than Affection.
Now, I actually was, after seeing Phoenix Wright, actually talking to Dave about it. He was trying to come up with one for Phoenix Wright, and mm-hmm. Affection is very, very good, Skylar.
Yeah.
I came up with Right for Right, and for Edgeworth, Worthy of Love, because Worthy being one of Edgeworth's nicknames.
Yeah. So. Mr. Wright would be a good one.
Uh-huh. Mr. Yeah. Wright would be a good one.
Yeah. Man, it's fun to name these shows. Dennis was onto something.
Yeah, I know, right? I still have more answers than all the ones I've already given, so don't worry, I'm not done.
Jala, what does Casey say?
Casey says, Zagreus from Hades already has some love interest going on in that game, and I would absolutely watch his reality dating show series, Zoom Dates with Zag. Gotta be socially distanced, of course.
Zag nuts.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. I'm definitely in a early running for shipping Zag and Dusa. So that's my current yes. characters that I think would be a really entertaining couple.
I like Hades' presentation of the Medusa. It's good.
Yep.
Yeah, and then finally here, David, what does Andrew say?
Link has been getting led on for 30 years. A link to the future.
I can't think of anything Zelda-wise. No? Hook up shot? No, that's... Yeah, I don't know. For mine, it's not really a pun or anything, but James from Silent Hill 2, and the show would just be called It Couldn't Happen Twice.
Well, I thought at the end he ended up with the women he deserved.
I mean, deserved is doing a lot of work there. Yes, you do walk away with different people depending on how you played.
A cold body of water.
You know, the lady of the lake. Yes.
Yeah.
No. There's only one where he walks away with Maria. But yes. I took that into account for my for my joke. Jala, how about you? You alluded to having several, so I want to hear some of these. I want to laugh at them.
I already listed three, okay. So I've got two more for you. GLaDOS, the date is a lie.
No!
And Monokuma, it's dating time instead of voting time. He has kids!
Ass trial? No, that's... So I've gone from naming dating shows to naming porns.
I know. Yeah.
It happened a while ago, actually.
I know. I mean, you were going into dong territory like real quick there, Cole.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Did you have any others, Charlie?
Mm-mm. Just those five.
Only those? Okay. Uh-huh. David, how about you?
Man, this is tough. Like, I'm definitely in the camp. Judge me what you want. I'm the type of person who definitely ships characters in games.
Yeah.
But like in most games, you know, I'm not sure they would actually make good dating stuff. Also, I feel like there's a like Pokemon, you know, I choose you title for a dating show, but that would require Pokemon to actually have any characters.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, like the there's the anime.
I suppose, yeah. You could go with that.
Everybody and Nurse Joy, like that's the ongoing joke, right?
Maybe is Nurse Joy in the fandom coded as a for lack of a better I was about to say the S word. I was about to call Nurse Joy a slut, and I don't feel great about that. I'm just going to do some maybe open and like, well, I did not mean to say that in a shameful way.
I think it's more, at least in the thing, like she inexplicably has like hundreds of twins.
Yes, that's what it was, if I remember correctly. Gotcha. That there are like Nurse Joy, but there's like 5 billion Nurse Joys, and they all look the same. But it's different Nurse Joys every time.
Okay.
Is at least in the English version of it, like that one.
Yes.
That's the way that they did it.
Oh, I like the idea that Nurse Joy like is like Tomie. From the Uzumaki, or not Uzumaki, from the Junji Ito comics, where she like just there are like multiples of them that were reproduced by budding after Finals is done to them.
Yep.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I also had GLaDOS for an answer. Ooh. Mine was going to be called The Cake Is Nigh.
Ooh. Nice.
That's good.
This was fun. This is good. Good prompt, Dennis. He's probably not hearing this, but I'm not going to remember to say it next time, so I might as well say it here. If you'd like
what to about Mario? I feel like Mario could be a good one.
I was gonna say something about Pipe, but my instincts are off. I've gone too far.
It's like the entire series has been like a dating game for him to try and win over a princess, but it never happens.
And yeah, she's a tease. Yeah.
I'm telling you, Bowsette's where it's at.
Yeah. So if you'd like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for those to go up on Monday afternoons. Thanks you to everybody who wrote in. This is good laughs. Good laughs, good times.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us that are exciting to us. Jala, what are people saying about what the PS5 is going to do?
So Sony announced a digital version of the PS5 that has the same performance, but would be $100 cheaper and does not have a disc drive, so it cannot play physical games. You have to download everything. GameStop bigwigs are saying that they're going to need to rebrand themselves, and you know, as a result of this, because it's headed more and more towards digital stuff. It's already been for a long time, but
for 17 years.
I know, but yet I know, yet another step. However, with consoles now being like, you already had the PlayStation Store where you could download stuff, but if there's a console that doesn't even have a disc drive, then that's like, you know, signaling a pretty something that GameStop should have already been on top of a long time ago. But anyway, they are trying to pivot to selling more game related merchandise rather than games themselves, but that's been a transition they've been in process of for years. The article that I was reading from CNN calls the current era the blockbuster era. That is, we're in a parallel situation to when Netflix and Redbox killed Blockbuster Video. Mm-hmm. Article suggests that GameStop's biggest asset right now is its customer database, which they can potentially use since game companies like EA and Nintendo have data on their part of the pie, but not the entire picture. Mm-hmm. And GameStop has a fuller picture in their customer data. That is not great overall, but then again, all of us are data, and that is how we are valuable to any company anymore. So,
and remember, in America, you are only worth what you are worth to a company.
Yeah.
They have a shitload of data on you at GameStop if you've ever engaged with them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You better hope that they only sell it to Nintendo.
I know, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough times. I know that I saw something about like GameStop has been working more closely with Microsoft about like the launch, not just the launch, but like the strategy for the Xbox going forward with theirs. Xbox kind of leading their next gen SKU with something that does have a disc drive to it. But yeah, the pawn shop days are going to have to come to a close for GameStop. Pretty soon. So
yep,
it's weird, strange times, weird liminal transitional times.
I see this as an absolute win.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, I don't like GameStop.
See, but I feel like I see the used game as a very important part of keeping the game industry honest.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm definitely, you know, whenever PlayStation 5s come back in stock, I'm going to get the one with the disc because I have so many disc-based PS4 games, and I would like to, you know, not have a PS4 Pro plugged into my TV while a PS5 is plugged into it, because God knows there's not going to be enough room in my entertainment center for both of them. You know? So, yeah. I can see all sides of it, but, you know, the used game, there's a difference between the used game market and what GameStop specifically does is the thing. I think that like the used game, even if GameStop goes away, you're going to have a strong secondhand market for used games on online marketplaces as well.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we have a fucking post office, but
yeah.
Yes. Well. Yeah, I'll move on to mine here real quick. This is just a thing's happening, but I saw this and I got excited about it. A video game called The Medium that I've been looking forward to since they announced it is going to be released on December the 10th. Biographicals here. This is the new game by Bloober Team, the team that did Layers of Fear, that did Observer. This is the one that is a first-person horror stealth game that combines two things that are my absolute favorite things in the world, which are art influenced by Zdzislaw Beksinski and H.R. Giger. Both are, you know, people who create horrific, hyper-detailed art, and also the music of Akira Yamaoka, the composer and sound designer for Silent Hill. This is going to be coming out on December the 10th, both on PC and on the Xbox Series S as a part of Game Pass. Additionally, this is a game that is coming out at $50 as opposed to the $70 at that a full AAA new game would come out for, showing that there is going to be, you know, even though the upper price for a regular game like that is going up to $70, there is going to be a chance for much stronger variance determined mm-hmm. by the developers and publishers of these games as they come out. So that is exciting to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
The Medium looks dope, guys. I want to play it.
Cool.
It's going to be fun. Yep. that's what's up?
Nice.
Yeah. David, what's going on with Asteroids?
Yeah, so this is kind of just an interesting piece. Someone published an in-depth art analysis of the mechanics of Asteroids. They call it Asteroids by the Numbers. And, for example, it talks about the fact that the sizes of the asteroids as you break them up are very specifically chosen, so that even though the asteroid decreases in overall size, for small asteroids, which is ultimately what it breaks into, is the same cross section as one large asteroid.
The same area? Like the same area of the two-dimensional figure?
Well, no, it's like basically if you place them four small asteroids side by side, they would be as have the same width as the diameter of one large asteroid.
Oh, okay. So it's not like they would fit together like puzzle pieces. It's just that.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No. So the idea being that basically the area that's like flying at you that you have to dodge stays the same.
Okay.
And also pointing out that this is important because the game was super low resolution, and so you could only turn in 5-degree increments, which mm-hmm. meant that you could you were in effect only had a very discrete angles you could fire at.
Yeah.
And so basically the smaller an asteroid is, the closer it has to be before you can hit it. They go through a bunch of stuff. There's also the little snippet that your ship in real life would have to be able to survive about 30 G's in order to maneuver the way it does.
That seems like a lot. I'm not sure. I don't know how many G's like an actual spacecraft would have to go through.
So that would be a lot. It would definitely be very, very difficult, bordering on impossible for a human pilot to survive that.
Yeah, you would like be turned to jelly. It would
almost certainly be impossible.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, there'll be a link to this on the post. This is kind of my shit. Like, I don't, you know, this kind of mathematical analysis with summaries for dum-dums is the kind of thing that I normally associate with writing about Tetris.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's good to see that apply to something else.
Yeah. The other mechanic that I didn't know was a thing in Asteroid, I guess I don't remember this, is apparently the bullets would accurately take into account the velocity of your ship. So if you like accelerated backwards and fired, the bullet would just stay in place.
I wasn't aware you could accelerate backwards, but I guess you could point your nose directly in the opposite of the direction of your
yeah, I guess that's what it said.
Of your motion, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. I kind of want to play Asteroids now, but it's not the same on a it's not the same on a non-vector screen. And the last, maybe there is an Asteroids machine at the last place I remember it being over in Deschner's Pizza in Mansfield, but I don't know that it would still be there. It's been a couple years since I've been there, so.
I think I'm a very shallow gamer, because like once the graphics of a game are like really outdated and stuff, I'm just like, I'm not interested in playing that anymore.
No.
See, Asteroids is a game I feel like there would be, and I know there's been a couple that have kind of done this, but I feel like that's a game there could be legs to of taking that core gameplay and updating it.
There's been a couple.
Unlock the guns.
Well, I mean, I'm not even saying like, not even just like they did like Asteroids 2K, but I mean, you know, say like do like Elite Dangerous, but with, you know, floaty asteroids physics.
There was Blasteroids, which was Atari's kind of follow up that added a little bit more mechanical nuance to it.
I was thinking of Geometry Wars being the successor to this.
Oh, yeah.
But didn't I thought in Geometry Wars, like, if you let off the stick, you stop moving fairly.
Geometry Wars was extremely precise. There was not the momentum system that was that was present here.
The one I remember is, what was it, like, Sony Online had, I think it was, like, Interstellar Rift or whatever, that was, like, multiplayer.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, did you have a story?
I purposely did not bring one since we were running along.
Okay.
Good job.
Attaboy. How do you all feel about bundling it up? The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this level number 346. Wow, that's a big number. Thank you for being patient with our little week off there. Like I said, we're going to be taking the U.S. election night off of recording. So that week is, you know, going to be no show, at least on this show. Yeah. So just so you're aware of that, I would like to thank everybody, you know, thank the co-hosts here. Thank all three of you for sticking around for this kind of longer recording. As far as like admin stuff goes, would like to remind you about things that we that we talked about at the top. Deck of Wonders, Dennis's solo kind of legacy tabletop card game that went into kind of a late backer period. So if you missed the initial Kickstarter campaign, you can find information about how to get that in the initial run by going to his Twitter, his social media, Deck of Wonders, with underscores between all the words on Twitter. And also here on Duckfeed, we have launched a new show, Orb, a show about the Venture Brothers. Go to orb.show for that. Yeah. Otherwise, for this show, please leave ratings or reviews, tell your friends, and, you know, Patreon always helps. Patreon.com/DuckfeedTV. Am I forgetting anything about promotions and such?
Remember, folks, vote early, but just once.
Yes, please only vote once. Don't commit crimes to vote. Also, yeah. I would encourage you to vote for the Democrats in this case, because they are the only people who in power who seem to at least pretend to care whether you live or die. I'm not going to pretend not to have a stance on this. I understand if you're, you know, hesitant about Biden, and also if you're hesitant about electoralism at this point. I would say that there is a body count attached to this choice. You know, work against the voter suppression. Do what you can. If you have already done so, you have my unending gratitude and appreciation. For God's sake, we all need to stick together on this now when it's going to be easier, as opposed to after four more years of this, when we're going to continue in free fall, gathering momentum, gathering speed as we break apart into the atmosphere and disintegrate into a series of militias and city states.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, ultimately, we're going to need to hold together regardless of what, you know, different people vote different sides. Like, yes.
I'm being glib, there are real stakes for a lot of people. We're seeing that in the Supreme Court arguments that are happening right now. There's just so much kind of hanging in the balance for real people who are vulnerable. So do what you can, please. I think that's everything there. We should probably go. If you would like to, here's how we end this. I've been Cole Ross. You can follow me on Twitter. See my tweets at Cole Ross.
David Money Smith doesn't exist.
I don't. I am a conscientious objector. Without Dennis here, I am lost. Follow me so that I cannot be lost.
Jala?
I am Jalachan in places, but I also have various other things, but you can find them on any of the Jalachan ones.
It is your portal. Jalachan is your password. Yes.
Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter, I think. And my last tweet was when Trump got elected, which was fuck with 137 yeah. views.
That's all you need to say. Yeah. That's all you need to say. And stick around for some titles. Okay, who has titles?
I have a few.
Okay, Joel.
Okay, so I have Hail Bay or Hail Bay, not Hail Mary, depending upon how you want to do that.
Okay.
Yeet the Kayak.
Okay.
Irresponsible Things with Weapons.
Okay.
And Fast Swallow, because I totally heard Fast Swallow also.
I heard it as well. Yeah.
I heard it as well.
Who else has titles?
So I had Yeet the Kayak, Buns of the Patriots, okay. And gone from naming dating shows to naming porn.
Okay. Sorry, I'm going to need at least 5 more minutes to type that. Sorry, Greta is also demanding my attention, so I'm distracted. Ben, you got anything?
I just said Randa Rambo.
That's pretty good, too.
Okay. I have Weapons Are Close and We Own Your Gods. Yeet the Kayak has the votes. I also like that. We all laughed at that.
I can get behind that.
Any objections to Yeet the Kayak?
It's hip and cool, unlike Cole Ross.
No, I am decidedly on hip.
Well, sorry, I was just pulling that back in from when you didn't understand the cake
bit. Oh, yes. I got it. It's just it wasn't my first instinct about it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go. I'm going to go to sleep.
Definitely. Have a great night and keep safe, y'all.
Yeah, have a good week. See you guys.
Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Peace. Bye.
Bye. Bye.